one gentleman who has gone further than all of these guys by a lot is Jack Lausma, the former astronaut who, amongst many other accomplishments, spent 59 days on Skylab 3, so he knows a few things about space. Wow. Jack, thank you so much for coming on the program with us.
Well, I'm glad I can join you. I haven't spoken with you folks up there in WJR for a very long time, but it's good to keep in touch. I know you're still up and at them.
Well, space is in the news, and so we thought we'd give you a call. So I'm curious, I saw a reference in a news article to the fact that now this craft just took the youngest and oldest astronauts up into space. That's the words they used. Do real astronauts like yourself take minor offense with the way the word is being thrown around by some of these private craft?
Well, I was probably the youngest because I was born on leap year.
Okay.
We watch them and with some interest. We hope they'll be successful and hope that they'll make some progress and they'll get to orbit sometime and have their own space station.
How hard is what these two men have done to do from scratch?
Second, please.
I'd say how hard is what these two guys have done, create their own spacecraft, to do when you don't have a NASA program behind you, to do it on your own?
Well, to do it on your own, of course, you don't have all this background. You don't have all the experience that has been gleaned. It's like going on back into Mercury with NASA. You know, there's a lot of unknown there, but they've built up that information. And I think the new guys have a real opportunity to experience what usually have learn and apply it and go even further and better.
Do you think that they have any advantages over a government-sponsored program like NASA?
I don't think so. They have a little more independence, I guess you might say. They don't have to have the federal government that set all the rules and guidelines and make the decisions. But on the other hand, the NASA program accomplished a whole lot in a short period of time, and I think these people can too.
The two efforts that they made, so Branson went up about 50 miles, and Jeff Bezos' craft went up 61 or 62 miles. And the Bezos team said that, you know, that was real space because there's a line, I forget the name of it, Manline or something like that. I'm sure you're familiar with it, that constitutes where space really begins. Can you explain that to us, or if that's true?
Yeah, that's quite an open question. Now, actually, I think they got to 351,000 feet, which is 66.5 miles. The scientists say the edge of space is at 100 kilometers because it's an easy number to work with, and that is less. That's 62.5 miles. So he just beat that by 4 miles. We in the Apollo program, however, have our own view when we are in the atmosphere. We have this software inside our capsule that shifts from orbital software to entry software. When it feels at 0.05 Gs, that means if you weigh 200 pounds and you feel 10 pounds on your back, you have started to enter the atmosphere, and that happens around 75 miles. So those of us who fly Apollo feel like these guys really didn't come to the same definition that NASA has of where space is, but they got up there real high.
Why is there such a debate over where space begins? You know, that seems like it ought to be a pretty hard number, but apparently there's multiple interpretations. Why is that so vague?
Well, I guess it's harder to get to 75 miles than it is to get to 50 miles.
Yeah, that's one reason. But I guess if you can only go 50, then you're going to call 50 space. I remember reading in a book where, and maybe this is a definition of space, where something about the weight of the molecules in the atmosphere can no longer sustain the light or whatever, and that's why you go from, like, even in the middle of the day, you go from what we colloquially refer to as light, you know, blue skies or whatever, to a black sky with stars. Is at what point do you pass through that when you are trajecting upwards?
Well, I don't. It's hard to know or hard to recall because it probably is gradual as you get to the very top. But we knew that we were. We always shoot for an altitude that's much higher than all those demarcation lines between space and we typically, I think, in the early flights in Germany, for example, and fly up over 100 miles in order to stay in orbit. And in Skylab, we are at 275 miles orbiting the Earth. Still, we would decline in our orbit a little bit every day, but it was marginal compared to the drag you sense and the speed with which you descend or get to the lower atmospheres with machinery. So it's all a matter of I think how what capability you have to get there is how you define it.
Yeah, I guess so.
Yeah, Jack, is there something that so I'm saying civilians that are going into space now, are there going to be effects on when if this program continues and you send more people into space? You guys trained for it a while. Your bodies were physical. You did physical fitness to take it. Is there any going to be any exertion on, you know, normal people's bodies if they're doing civilian space flights?
Well, you know, the medical aspects of being in space flight are always under consideration. And the Skylab space station, of course, we had some of the longest flights, a month, 2 and 3 months. And it was a preparation for the longer flights that you're having on the International Space Station now, both in terms of what happens to your body as well as to how do you build and live in a huge space station compared to a capsule. Where you in a long-duration flight, you have to not only really think about living in a small space, but you have to decide what to do about eating and sleeping, waste management, and all that sort of thing. So that's why we had the Skylab space station. And we realized that when we went into space with Skylab, that the longest flight duration in America at that time had only been 15 days. So there's going to be a big jump between 15 days and a year, for example, where they're staying up in the International Space Station for a year. We got back from our flight at 2 months. It was a record, a U.S. record at the time. We came back with 20% less blood and 10% fewer red cells. And that was unpredicted. And so those are the kinds of things you have to guard against as you're going to longer duration missions. And that's the reason we did those. But now they're staying in the International Space Station up to the point of, I think, 11 to 12 months has been the record so far.
Now, 20% less blood, 10% less red blood cells. Over time, when you came back on Earth, did that replenish itself?
It did, and it probably would not have gotten any worse. I think it leveled at a new level that was comfortable at that altitude. But we're also living in an atmosphere of only 5 pounds per square inch, whereas we're almost 15 pounds per square inch down here. So our atmosphere down here is 90% or 80% nitrogen and only 20% oxygen. Your body has to have a certain amount of oxygen. So once you lower the pressure, that means there's going to be a lot less oxygen in there unless you make it in there. So our actual atmosphere was in the Skylab space station was 70% oxygen and 30% nitrogen, almost mm-hmm. just the opposite of what we have on the ground level. But we had to have the oxygen level up there, and living in that much oxygen is best for your body, for sure. You don't want to get any less because it's like living on peak of Mount Everest if you
right.
take all the oxygen away.
Right.
And that affects your body and affects the other functions of your body. So I think those kind of leveled out where we were based on the amount of oxygen we had to breathe.
A lot of deep breathing on that. Would you, finally, if they asked you to go on one of these civilian flights, now we are talking to Jack Lausman, who's a man who, according at least to Wikipedia, has spent 1,619 hours in space. So if they asked you to say, you know, hey, want to come up on a 10-minute ride? It's 50 miles above the Earth. Would you do it, or would you say, hey, you know, that's a little bit like a tricycle for me?
Yeah, I'd say, Ben, they're done that. Thanks anyway.
That's what I figured. Jack Lausman, thank you for spending time with us. It's great to talk to you, and thanks for your insight.